Chapter 16. Lenny Saxby was a trained soldier, a former member of the Special Air Service. It had been his whole life, and Ron Richardson had taken that life from him. That was how Saxby reasoned. He'd been a boy entrant, straight from school, learning a trade, armourer. Later he served with Green Howards, rising through the ranks and eventually transferring to SAS. Lenny had been a sergeant major, and Ronnie Richardson was his troop commander all those years ago. There'd been a stupid death, one of those useless, silly, unnecessary deaths. The man's name was Edwards, and his fatality so public that, out of the service, in the real world, there would have been no doubt that it was manslaughter. This death was almost a cliché, for Edwards was shot dead by his sergeant major. An accident. But there'd been four of them together out on a field firing range in Wales, not far from Brecon Beacons. The whole troop had been on an escape and evasion exercise, and Richardson, the troop commander, Sergeant Major Saxby, and Trooper Edwards and McRoberts had come together at dawn, their first meeting since the exercise had started. Their rendezvous came after 6 long, strenuous days and nights in the field, under deadly serious conditions, including the use of live ammunition. The rest of the troop was spread out over some 50 square kilometres, making their way in pairs to the RV. Edwards and McRoberts were the first to clock into the small copse close to the road down which they expected transport to arrive. Everything they'd done over the past week had been under strict rules of engagement, laid down by vigilant umpires, and everything they'd done carried more than a hint of danger. On these kind of exercises, people took the gloves off. You could get destructively mashed up if you got caught, or if it came to close fighting. Now, for the first time that week, they could relax, though they didn't. Richardson and Saxby had been waiting in the wood for 6 hours, in a soaking cold drizzle that had undoubtedly slowed their reactions, blunted their edges. They were both tired. Edwards and McRoberts had operated together throughout most of their time with the regiment, and neither Richardson nor Saxby had reason to believe they were anything else but close and mutually reliant, trusting soldiers. But today, exhausted and edgy, they were bickering when they arrived, and things quickly got worse. To start with, Richardson took little notice, though he became aware that the squabble was bitter almost from the first exchange. There was none of the good-natured needling you'd expect from a couple of hardened professional soldiers.
"You bastard, you've been bloody seeing her, ain't you? Eh? Eh? McRoberts, you slimy bastard. It's true, ain't it? Fucking true."
"So what if it is?" They were both truculent, cocky, and quickly the dispute went from shouted insults to blows. With both Richardson and Saxby in no doubt that the men were in that most serious of conflicts, a quarrel over a woman. The details really do not matter now, but she was a local girl called Lucy. She'd been going out with Edwards, but it now appeared she'd been cheating with McRoberts. As the only officer present, Richardson should have stepped in as soon as he realized this was a potentially dangerous business. Later, at the court of inquiry, he admitted that the matter got out of hand with the ferocity of a bushfire. The two men came to blows alarmingly quickly, exploding in merciless brutality. Flailing fists and weapons, grunts, kicks, stifled cries and thuds, as they rolled on the ground locked together, both using their considerable skills of combat, out of control now and swamped by fury. When the first blows came, Saxby shouted orders at the two troopers, commanding them to stop, his voice audible over some distance. But Edwards and McRoberts had lost all sense of discipline, and McRoberts looked as though he would kill Trooper Edwards, who was already bleeding badly from a cut above his right eye. Now Saxby, aware that things had got out of control, took an understandable, if foolish, action. He drew his 9mm H&K automatic pistol, with the intention of firing a warning shot to shock the men out of their reciprocal fury. Afterwards, Saxby could not explain why his weapon discharged prematurely. He had known it was loaded and cocked, he said, but his thumb was feeling for the safety catch as the barrel cleared his holster. "My forefinger must have tightened on the trigger, and by some oversight the safety must have already been off," he admitted at the court of inquiry, the words coming out in a formal, cold, matter-of-fact manner that raised the eyebrows of at least 2 senior officers. What was not in dispute was that the automatic had fired, and the bullet had hit Edwards in the right ear, killing him instantly.
"Jesus," Saxby croaked, standing over the body. "Jesus, I knew that bloody woman would be the death of one of them. I knew it."
And this was the unfortunate crux of the matter. Saxby's previous knowledge of the state of things between Edwards and McRoberts concerning Lucy Smith. As a senior warrant officer, Lenny Saxby should have reported exactly what he knew to his troop commander. Any friction, serious or imagined, between men working closely together in the field could put everyone at risk. Sergeant Major Saxby should have known better, should never have hesitated, or even got himself into this position. Saxby, however, had a besetting sin, a chink in his armour, which was his vanity. For all his undoubted military skills, Lenny imagined that, as far as women were concerned, he was a true Jack the Lad. Tall, well-built, with looks that were described as ruggedly attractive, and thick blonde hair that he wore a shade too long, giving him the appearance of a rakish pirate. Unhappily, Lenny Saxby was also an additional side to the already unequally loaded triangle of Edwards, McRoberts, and the fickle Lucy. The girl had been making out not only with the two troopers, but also with their sergeant major, whose second marriage had broken down less than a year before. As he prepared for the court of inquiry, Saxby went to Richardson, pleading with him not to answer any leading questions concerning Saxby's involvement with the girl. "You know it was an accident, boss. That's what's really at the bottom of this. If they get wind I was involved with a little scrubber, it'll turn things into a circus and they'll throw me to the lions."
"Len, how can I hold out? McRoberts heard what you said, and the girl's been blabbing her mouth off all over the place. Let's see how the whole thing goes down."
But Ronnie Richardson was more concerned with saving his own skin. As the only officer present, it could easily have been argued that the responsibility for the death was his. But he made certain that nobody even suggested this by the way he phrased his written report. Saxby, he hinted, had infringed good order and military discipline by not disclosing everything concerning Edwards and McRoberts' serious disagreement over the girl. If I'd been in full possession of the facts regarding the girl, my senior NCO and the two other ranks, I would probably have had one or all three of them transferred to another troop, Richardson wrote before really sticking the knife in. In fact, as far as Sergeant Major Saxby is concerned, I would seriously have considered a disciplinary board to judge his fitness to remain in the regiment. The court left no doubt concerning apportionment of blame for this accidental death. Within a week of the findings being published, it was suggested that Saxby should take early retirement on half pay. So he left the regiment and the army, which had been father, mother, wife, and mistress to him. He left as an embittered man, whose only reason for living now was revenge, though he did not become wholly aware of it for a while. Richardson had no illusions about his own situation. Indeed, there was a large question mark concerning Captain Richardson's motives for an application to transfer to the bootnecks. People indulged in loose talk, but two things are certain. First, throughout his life, Richardson rarely looked back, and the accidental death of Trooper Edwards hardly ruffled his conscience. Second, it was the exact opposite for Leonard Saxby. The memory of Richardson's evidence and its outcome preyed constantly on his mind. In civilian life, Saxby drifted quickly, becoming unsettled and rarely holding down a job for any length of time. He was envious by nature, and within a few years abandoned any responsibility for his actions. He saw Richardson as the complete and sole cause of his downfall, therefore the reason for his current circumstances. This one conclusion overran his mind, sending him into a life of obsession revolving around one aim, revenge. By this time Richardson had dropped out of sight and into his well-padded life as an assassin for hire. So when Saxby came looking for him to exact revenge, he could not be found, which caused the obsession to spiral, eventually becoming manic, then profoundly psychotic. Now, Lenny Saxby had a daughter by his first marriage, and the daughter Tracy was blessed with both intelligence and ambition. This landed her a serious job with the international conglomerate Siemens. Based mainly just outside Newcastle-on-Tyne, young Tracy, at age 22, became a rising star who seemed set fair until the company had to close down its big British-based operation, and she found herself suddenly deprived of both job and future.